now, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
Phil, Dean, what will it be today? Now intercontinental, LA to Australia. It's your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. It's your Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
Well, hello there, Dean Haglund.
Well, hi, Phil Lairness. How are you?
Time just sped by since we last spoke.
I know. It's as if, yeah, well, never mind. I'm not blowing it.
No. Time. What would you blow?
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing to ruin here. No surprises.
Just move along.
No illusions.
Move along. Exactly. This is your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. I'm Phil Lairness, and we have a special show planned for you today. We talked about it at the tail end of last week's show. We are going to analyze movie trailers for some of the big, shiny, brassy,
summer,
loud box office hopefuls that are being released this summer to a Cineplex near you. And
how exciting.
And why are we doing this, Dean?
Well, because we have all the time in the world. No, I'm sorry. why are we doing this, Phil?
Well, we did this once before, and
it was really popular. And in fact, I seem to say you hadn't seen them, so I was describing trailers to you because you hadn't had a chance to see any of these trailers. I think that was the last.
It's been a long, long time, and
yeah.
But we talk so often about the marketing of movies and the mismarketing of movies. Either mismarketing, there's two ways you can mismarket a movie, I guess. One is you can take a movie that might have been successful and through your bad marketing, release a film that's not successful. The
right.
other way you mismarket a movie is by, in an effort to make it more successful than you fear it's going to be, lying about what the movie is or misleading people about what the movie is. That's definitely a way to mismarket it, because the truth is, even if that movie opens bigger, the plummet and the word of mouth is going to be worse, even if the movie might be good, because as we've talked about, people just don't like being given something other than what they're told they're getting.
Right. And in doing so, sometimes you give away the entire thing. And other times there's no, all the best jokes, all the critical key factors are shown in the trailer, and you just, or they show the ending, for instance, in that horror movie that I kind of liked, except that in the trailer, it showed it how it ended.
That horror movie you kind of liked. Who could forget that?
Quarantine.
I believe
that movie
that made it on a year-end list of parts of 10 movies Dean might have seen.
I saw the whole thing, and that's what pissed me off, because the trailer showed how do you end a movie where you're trapped in a building and you're cut off from the world and there's something horrible inside killing everybody.
So we are not pre-reviewing the movies. Oh, who lies? Of course, we will be doing that. We'll be we're going to be assessing whether we think the movie is going to be good or bad, whether we think it's going to be successful, not successful, through what we're seeing in the trailers. And as the summer goes by, if we've thrown a trailer under the bus for whatever reason, or we've thrown a movie under the bus because of the trailer, we will certainly reappraise that at the appropriate time. But let's look ahead to the big summer releases through what their marketing departments want us to be looking at this particular juncture in time. Why don't you get us started, Dean? What's the first trailer you want to talk about?
Well, have you seen Suicide Squad?
Yes. Yes. I watched these trailers, the Suicide Squad trailers, because, again, when I was early in on the reporting of what a disaster this Batman v Superman debacle was going to be, both in terms of quality, where it had none, and box office, which it lacked a lot, I knew that Warner Brothers was panicking. And one of the reasons they were panicking was that they felt really good about the Suicide Squad movie that they had coming up in the summer. But apparently they're going back and doing reshoots because one of the reasons they think that Batman versus Superman didn't work is because it didn't have enough laughs in it. So their message is, oh, we better put laughs in our movies. So apparently they're going back and shooting the funny for Suicide Squad. So I talked a little bit about the trailer way back when. I don't recall it so much, but
no.
Anyway, but that's the context in which it was brought up. So what did you think?
Right. Well, I think I got worries about this thing. You know, all your villains look super scary for sure, and you take the most evil people on the planet and you form a Suicide Squad that goes on a crazy mission.
Is this not the Dirty Dozen? It's the Dirty Dozen with superhero villains, right?
Superhero villain Dirty Dozen. That's exactly it. And
Is there a Lee Marvin? Does there seem to be a Lee Marvin equivalent? Someone who leads the team? But
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Who, yeah,
who's do that? What I say, and if you don't, you get killed. Anything, okay. But you know, you're killed. You go outside, you disobey orders, you're killed. And that sort of, you know, that speech that he gives sort of reiterates through. They introduce them all, they give that speech, and then there's a bunch of explosions and some jokes in there afterwards. And you're like, okay, this is to the letter how you cut a trailer with a bunch of unknown characters. Each character is introduced in sequential order. Then you set your act two. Okay, here's what we do. And then you put in all your big money shots at the end of the trailer and then cap it with some punchline of some sort. And I don't know, I'm 50-50 on it. It could work, but right now that trailer is not selling me the movie, unfortunately.
Yeah, do you get any sense of a story or what it is they are facing, why they're coming together?
No. In fact, the opening question is, what if, you know, a guy like Superman comes down and rips the roof off the White House and takes the president? What could we possibly do? You know, what if Superman was bad is the opening preamble that's said in the White House.
They should have said. They should have said, "What if Batman versus Superman is bad? What can we do then? Let's send the Suicide Squad to take out Zack Snyder and that team of buffoons."
Yes, go back in time somehow. So,
well,
I don't know.
You know, because here's it is so the Dirty Dozen, and the Dirty Dozen stands the test of time. That is so much fun, right?
Right.
And it was not a movie where. So often in action films, and especially in superhero comic book films, it really boils down to the villain, right? How intriguing, how fascinating, how terrifying is the villain? How interesting, not only an opponent for the hero is the villain, but how, I don't know, how interesting a mirror for the hero is the villain, right? Into the psyche of the hero. And but here in the Dirty Dozen, there really is no villain. The villain are Nazis. There's just an assignment that they're given. And yet that film still worked. And it still worked because of this concept of ordinary men who had committed these crimes but were nevertheless soldiers, and they were given an opportunity if they wanted to die like soldiers. For something bigger than themselves. Well, now you've got an entirely fictitious setup, right? Superhero villains. We're not going to care about them innately on that human level. to do the right thing. You know, it's all made up. So
yeah,
what's the story that is going to really grab us on that human level?
Well, exactly. And then, so now you're in the realm of Badass and Badass 2. And that only saving grace was the foul-mouthed little kid who would also kick ass. Not Badass, Kick Ass. That's the movie I'm thinking of.
Well,
Kick Ass and Kick Ass 2, you know?
Well,
so
we do. And again, we don't know. This is not to knock that Suicide Squad doesn't work, because, like I said, I heard some things where they're really, really high on it. But the trailer gives me no sense of why I should be high on it.
Right. Yeah, I'm not.
I knew as much about the concept of this and why I might like it from the one-line pitch, honestly.
Yeah, and it's prefunctionary. Like, I mean, it is almost as if you went to iMovie in your Mac, in your laptop, and picked the trailer template and stuck in just images from the movie. I mean, it is almost that basic.
And
a trailer.
You know, it's almost like this is the DC Universe's late summer attempt to create what Marvel did with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
And,
yeah, yeah.
And you remember that trailer?
Smart talkings. Yeah.
Not your A-list superheroes, and something that could be standalone, and something where the not only the, I don't know the expression of that movie, but the marketing itself did leave some people going, okay, this just seems nuts. And they ran the risk of that in the effort to let you know we're doing something different here. But
yeah.
I don't feel, if that is the case with this movie, that the marketing went far enough.
Yeah, went far enough. If you don't know the mission and or why. Like, it seems that supervillains with the threat of death, that is their one motivation to go on this mission. It seems like there should be a bigger, greater cause, or at least somebody having an epiphany of something.
You know, I told you how they went back to reshoot, to add humor, because Deadpool was such a big hit. And Deadpool, people loved because it was funny. So we got to go get the funny into this movie.
Right.
Well, you know what Deadpool did was it deconstructed so many of the motifs.
Right.
Maybe a way to approach the Suicide Squad trailer is to deconstruct the motif of comic book movie trailers.
Blow it up, as it were.
Yeah. The villains themselves are mocking the way that they usually get introduced. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Something like that, where it's a...
They're sitting around in a holding cell. Hey, if you were introduced as a villain in a movie, how would you be introduced?
Right. That's pretty funny, actually.
Anyway. All right. What else do you got?
Well, of course, I don't know if you listen to other podcasts, but I was a guest on Steel Wars, the Star Wars podcast that is here in Australia. And we talked about Rogue One, the new Star Wars yearly effort.
Yeah, but so I gotta call foul on this. Isn't that Christmas? That's not a summer movie. That comes out on Christmas Day.
I thought they came out this summer.
I don't think so.
Okay, never mind then. Well, that's really early.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great trailer. Since we brought it up, may as well talk about it. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I thought it was kind of cool. I like the idea of who got the battle plans for the Death Star. If we go through all the scrolls of every beginning Star Wars movie, there's another movie hidden inside those narratives. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I think is. I think that's great. But yeah, December 16th worldwide. That movie.
Oh, damn it.
So not the.
Why did I think it? I thought it was August 16th. I thought.
No,
I
why
know,
would
why?
They? Yeah, one a year, man. They're doing one a year. The Christmas holidays
Christmas.
For the kids, because they got to move the toys. Okay.
What else
you got then?
Well, did you see this Approaching the Unknown, this space movie?
No.
Approaching, it seems to be sort of the abyss, but set in space somehow. It's hard to figure out, but it looks pretty good. I'm liking it. It's called Approaching the Unknown. And as I look it up on my IMDb, see who else is in it, the trailer is actually kind of compelling. It's one of the few that I liked watching. Because I don't know how it came across. I think I saw it on Facebook, actually, and took a look at it and went, hey, this is kind of neat. It's a, who's in it?
Mark Strong and Luke Wilson.
Yeah. Like, what a weird combo, right? And then Mark Elijah Rosenberg is the writer-director on this thing. And it seems like he's really got a taste for how lonely and maddening the space travel would be. Because it's kind of a guy going nuts in space and starting to hallucinate and all that, which is, I always think, space travel, they try to always make it look so exciting, but it must be mind, if you go to anywhere in space, the sheer amount of time you're stuck in a tiny capsule, the weightless, no less, I would think after a while, make you go sort of batty.
I mean, this guy, it's his feature debut. He has one credit, film credit, as a writer or a director. And I mean, this is it. So this is a really quite interesting.
Yeah.
What you described, though, was like taking a cross-country drive with Phil Lairness, making the troopers out there.
Yes, I think this is it in space. That's what I meant to say. It's not the abyss. It's a cross-country drive with Phil.
Now,
in
this
space.
Was a Sundance film, so I believe. So, it has that cachet going for it. But, now I'm really interested in watching that trailer.
Yeah. And I'm interested in the movie. The trailer, if it's selling what the movie is, I think the movie might be kind of fascinating because I'm liking it. That's what I'm saying.
Cool.
Approaching the Unknown.
So one to look forward to, Approaching the Unknown. What else you got, Dean?
Look at me. Saj, Legends of Tarzan. Who doesn't love the Legends of Tarzan?
I did not know we were getting another Tarzan movie. And I guess I should have, I did say, some people were complaining about this, but I did say that I was thrilled that, not thrilled is not the right, but I appreciated that Universal, we're talking about summer movies, right? And the modern summer season begins the first Friday of May. And why does it? Because that was when Universal released their first Brendan Fraser Mummy movie. And people forget, but these Stephen Sommers directed Mummy movies, these were huge hits in the 90s. And that started the new global summer season as the final Friday in May. And they're rebooting the Mummy series again. With Tom Cruise starring in it, but it is an effort for Universal to jump into the big game, get into the deep end to do battle with Warner Brothers and with Disney/Marvel, and to confront the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the DC Cinematic Universe with the Universal Monster Universe. So in the Mummy, like I said, they're introducing a character played by Russell Crowe, who will be revealed in his own standalone to be Dr. Jekyll. And of course, we know Johnny Depp is already shooting The Invisible Man. So at least, look, these characters, the incarnations of their characters, find their origins in classic films. Rather than, the pages of comic books. And I say that's every bit as viable a source for big summer entertainment, as the comic books. So I've got no problem with Universal jumping in the game like that. And I guess I have no problem then with, bringing back Tarzan. If we're bringing back The Jungle Book every other week, we can bring back Tarzan as well. That said, this trailer...
Well, this trailer has, it looks like I'm just guessing, but the CGI work looks like it's straight out of Weta Studios in New Zealand. Their monkey gorilla work is all the motion capture that was Planet of the Apes and King Kong. So all your artificial monkeys that are running around look athletic and scary and all of that. It seems that it's trying to be a little more environmentally sensitive than the original Tarzan, in that, He's concerned. He's not being cruel to other animals. He's not tearing the jaws apart of a lion or anything, or alligator. What would he do? He pulled the jaws apart. Tarzan did, as did King Kong of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. But here he's seeming at one with nature. It's more ecologically friendly. And then, of course, your plantation owner is the villain who then...
Wow, you got more out of this trailer than I did. I'll be honest with you. Because I wrote down, maybe it was a slightly different trailer. Who knows? Maybe your trailer there, it is. Maybe this global consciousness doesn't resonate here in America, so we can't have it. Because we got to get people in red states, climate change deniers to come and see this film. So, so maybe it's a different trailer, but then maybe it is in there. And I just didn't catch this because the note that I wrote, pull me apart, people, if I'm wrong, but I just said that, if you're going to do this movie, doesn't it need to resonate with some kind of global consciousness? And I wrote literally that nothing in the trailer indicated it does. So again, either I saw a different trailer or I just missed it and I owe somebody a mea culpa.
I maybe saw the second cut of it.
Say you saw trailer two. That is, you did just say to me you saw trailer two. So maybe the first one failed in that and that's why they brought it to the second one. Because it was really missing. But I would like to address that CGI comment. I don't know specifically the Weta Studios, what movies did they do?
Well, Lord of the Rings, for one.
See, I think you're giving this movie way too much credit because I was reminded of the CGI in the early Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies that looked almost like video games. Yeah. In fact, I would say that the whole trailer, aside from seeming like a lesser Jungle Book, you know, we just got the Jungle Book. This is a bad time for Tarzan to be opening, really.
Wow, that's true.
Honestly,
yeah.
Because that movie, I think, beat it to the punch. But I really felt like it was the new Planet of the Apes meets the early Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Oh, that's not good.
Spider-Man. Yeah, anyway, and Spider-Man. I'd go further than that, Dean. It opens on July 1st. I expect it to close on July 2nd.
Oh, really? Wow, I don't know if it's that bad.
Really? I sense huge box office disaster on this one.
Oh, you do? Well, at $180 million budget.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's a dark horse. Yeah.
Who?
But it's
$180 million. Is Dark Horse the company or...
Yeah, the production.
Oh, I thought you were saying it's a dark horse in that it's a long shot for the. And I was going to say, boy, $180 million is a lot to put on a long shot. Wow. So we're split on this. You think this has hit written on it, huh?
Well, I'm not saying that it's going to be as terrible as you think it is. That's all.
Yeah, I both think it's going to be bad. And I think it's going to be a huge disaster, though that doesn't mean internationally it won't make some money.
Right.
And you're seeing things through an international eye right now.
I am. Look at me.
Is it from it's from the director of the final Harry Potter movies.
Yeah, part two, Deathly Hallows, David Yates.
That doesn't necessarily mean anything to me. So, that would be like saying that one of the... movie, you remember John Glenn who directed several of the Bond films, all the Bond films in the 80s, you know, it'd be like from the director of For Your Eyes Only, right? It's like, well, yeah, he did a great job there in the James Bond universe. I don't know if he can go outside it, but we'll have a gentleman's wager on this and we'll continue to pay attention on this.
I don't have anything invested in this at all personally or anything like that, so I shrug my shoulders and give it its blessing either way it goes.
There is a moment in that trailer where he says, him, Tarzan, you, Jane, go. Okay. What else you got, Dean Haglin?
Okay, so then we get to Magnificent Seven. Now, have you seen this?
I was going to watch the Antoine Fuqua, the trailer for the Antoine Fuqua remake of The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
And... interestingly enough, in a couple weeks' time, on this show, there will be a reference to The Magnificent Seven and the movie that they ought to have made instead. But as this movie, again, opens September 23rd for award consideration, it is not a summer movie.
Oh, come on.
Sorry. Sorry, Dean Haglund. Sorry. Sorry, I must put my foot down and create a ruling on this one. Maybe we'll go ahead with the fall releases later in the summer. But people are just going to have to sit and wonder, what was Dean going to say about that magnificent trailer?
You'll never know. You'll never, never know.
It is an ironclad premise, your Magnificent Sevens. It's been remade so many times. Yep. In so many forms. Itself is a remake, for crying out loud, of The Seven Samurai. So
I know. Look at that.
Anyway, okay.
So, anyway, never mind. So then I saw Bad Moms, of course.
Oh, I did not watch this trailer. So I thought about it and then decided, I wanted to enjoy my life instead. Tell me, how was the trailer for Bad Moms?
You know, I was hoping for funnier. They really tried to cram the laughs in this thing as much as humanly possible. And it seems that it's this really angry, angry movie about about all the things we know what good parenting is and what good parenting can do. And that you're a loser if you're not an amazing mom who does all these things that we know. And so it's these bad moms that are just pissed. And so there's all these scenes of them drinking and it's just, there's so much rage underlying it that it's just hard to make me go, oh, that's funny. But you know, all good comedy comes from the emotion of rage. So it just seems that they didn't really filter it through jokes per se. They just sort of let the rage come to the surface and let that be the humor in and of itself.
Well, I'm reminded of maybe 10 years ago now. It was near when we were starting this show and The Breakup came out.
Oh, yes.
I think it was directed by Peyton Reed. It, of course, starred and was produced by Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston, and then co-star Jon Favreau and Vincent D'Onofrio. And this was a movie, if you'll recall, it was a hit. However, there was the sense, especially by critics, that this was not a good movie, that this was a bad movie. Vince Vaughn would make bad movies. Don't kid yourself. In fact, he might, some say, specialize in them. But that was not one of them. And what I took away from it was how angry and hurt-filled that movie was. The movie's called Breakup. And it felt really honest to me. There was a lot of pain in that movie that critics didn't like, audiences had trouble with. And I would argue that a big reason why at least audiences had trouble with it was because the trailer was all about making it look like the latest Wedding Crashers movie.
Right. Yeah. That they recut it to
push the funny, make people go, oh, we love that guy. That guy's funny. Jennifer Aniston's funny. Oh, my God. How funny will this movie be? Well, it will be funny. But if you read between the lines and look, there's this hint at rage here. So maybe Bad Moms, what you're describing is show a trailer that shows how angry the movie is. And, you might be reducing that opening weekend, but you might also be getting some fantastic word of mouth. Because people will go, it's angry, but it's honest. And, oh, man, is it funny.
Right. Which I think is a smarter way to sell a comedy, to have the word of mouth go, this thing's hilarious. Don't give away. There's a lot of jokes in this thing, but it seems that there's potentially more.
Let people know how they're going to feel watching the movie. That's fair. Let the joke surprise them. The problem, of course, is that the tone and how people are going to feel is a tough thing for trailer filmmakers to encapsulate in just a couple of minutes. Though I dare I say it's not impossible. But also, I'm not sure anymore that these companies really, to a degree, give a damn about word of mouth, in that they need as much money front-loaded in these things as possible. It's just another way, like we were saying last week or the week before, just another way in which it's got to serve the corporate bottom line and the corporate methodology. And that's too bad, because it doesn't serve the art form. And I don't mean the art form in the sense of, oh, yes, it's an art with our wine and our cheese, and let's appreciate right. it. What I mean is the art of movie going, right? Where movies yeah. play in theaters, and we want to talk about them and hear from other people. What did you think? Oh, cool. I'm going to go see that. And then you go and see it a few weeks after it opened. But the problem is, the corporate overlords don't give a rat's ass if you see it a few weeks after it opens. They don't see enough money from that.
Right. It's true.
And that's why film, its position in our imagination culturally has shifted so dramatically over the last 10, 15, 20 years. I'm glad that you picked that one. That's interesting. What else you got?
Well, and then the last one, of course, is Central Intelligence with Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, and Kevin Hart. Hilarious comedy.
By the way, Bad Moms opens for anyone who cares July 29th. July 29th.
There we go. Okay. So I'm in the money on that one.
Yeah. Okay. Central Intelligence. Yes.
So The Rock is a CIA.
Dwayne Johnson. Don't call him The Rock.
Sorry. He should stop working out if he doesn't want to be The Rock.
And this, of course, opens June 17th. It's from executive producer Ed Helms.
Look at that, huh?
Yeah, it's speaking of Vince Vaughn, when he used to make funny movies, it's from the writer-director of Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story.
Ah, look at that. And of course, he's a CIA agent who can only trust his old pal from high school who he hasn't seen, the one guy who saved him. Now, what's creepy about this trailer is its opening CGI work. Because it shows both of them in high school, and they've obviously cast other actors, but stuck their faces onto these actors and sort of morphed them. So it looks like really great casting. You go, wow, where did they find that overweight teenager to play Dwayne Johnson? And you realize they've morphed his face CGI with Dwayne Johnson doing the lines, and then Kevin Hart, but into other actors. And I feel so bad for the other actors who have to do the teenage work. Ugh.
So what did you think of this? Because I haven't even watched the trailer, and here's going to be my quick brush off of this movie. I am sick to death of big budget comedies or summer comedies having to be, when all is said and done, action films.
Yeah.
They follow the structure of action films, not comedies. And so they pretend to be comedies by throwing lots of jokes at you, but they're following the narrative conventions of an action film. Spy was an exercise in tedium. That movie, as funny as it was at times and as much as people liked it, that thing could not end fast enough, nor did it persist in refusing to end. And year after year, I'm getting these. We put these comedy, stars in what are basically action movies, and then, hey, make it funny.
Right.
The good
because
guys.
That's a trope.
That Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell thing. I said, Spy. Was it the Heat?
Get Smart.
Get Smart. The Heat with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. Anyway, so that's what this feels like to me,
and that's exactly what it is.
And we don't need another one, although this one is with African American cast, so it's a diverse version of something we don't need.
Yeah, but didn't Kevin Hart just do this in Ride Along? Isn't he the same character as like a wimpy? I'm out of my depth in Gunfire, and instead of Ice Cube, you put in Dwayne Johnson. And it's almost just a different enforcement organization, and you got the same movie basically. Kevin Hart just
can we blame Eddie Murphy? I mean, can we blame Beverly Hills Cop for this entire genre? Because you know, I go back
is that where it started?
I go back to the original Beverly Hills Cop, which is a film written for Sylvester Stallone. And right. Slive drops out and they replace him with Eddie Murphy, but it's the Stallone script. And they let Eddie Murphy work it. And he makes it funny. He finds the funny in it. He walks through that world and embraces it in a really fresh, novel way. Then they make the second one, and he tells us it's going to be so much funnier because this time it's fashioned for him. And damn if the second one didn't feel like a Stallone movie. And, and you know, so rarely when they quote-unquote fashion it for the funny guys do these action movies become more funny. In fact, I would say they become less funny. Midnight Run is an action movie that is hilarious because more than following action movie narrative tropes, more than following comedic conventions, it's a character piece.
Right. Yeah, a quirky character, two quirky characters.
And
so it becomes a buddy movie, really.
Yeah, and so, you know, anyway, I just, boy, you talk about, I've been reading so many essays about the movies in the late 70s that failed, movies like William Friedkin's Sorcerer that just opened Cannes. You know, it was a huge disaster when it came out in 77, opening opposite Star Wars. And now here it is almost 40 years later, and its restoration is opening Cannes. But there's this long list of great movies by auteur directors that were ignored by critics and audiences, obviously, but also really kind of ignored by critics. And how Star Wars, and a little bit before that, Jaws, had just so quickly transformed and eradicated not only audiences, but also to a degree critics' ability to watch movies with any sense of literacy, with any sense of critical examination, that, you know, these critics who were writing in 77 that the problem with Star Wars is not that it's quote-unquote a bad movie, but that it now will result in future decades of people being infantilized, audiences being infantilized, and being stuck in just banal, safe, conservative fantasy. There would be nothing subversive in movies whatsoever. And you know, and you see this thing, and that is writ large across it. Banal, conservative fantasy is a movie like Central Intelligence.
Well, there you nailed that one.
And I didn't see the trailer.
You don't have to.
Now I'm predicting what I'll say if I see the trailer. All right. What else? Any others, or was that your list?
I think that was my list right there. That's what I caught.
I did
see one more, but I don't know. I mean, the movie, it's called Bite. Like, I thought I should see a horror just to see what horror trailers are doing these days. And Bite, you know, shaky first person point of view camera, like Blair Witch, and then somebody gets bit, and then they turn into horrible zombie monsters, whatever. There's blood, and all the horror movies, they're still cut to fast. You know, it starts off with like long shots, and it takes its time to set up the thing, and then all the horror elements and all the special effects, makeup, and stuff are always like strobe light. And that makes you nauseous. So, so they're not cutting horror movies differently or horror movie trailers differently. It's still done the same way, long opening and quick successions at the end with whatever the horror is.
You know, like I never saw the trailer to The Witch, which is why it was able to escape theaters without me catching it. And I'm desperate to see it. I'm going to go see this horror film this week, Green Room, starring Patrick Stewart and Anton Yelchin. But I don't see these trailers. Like I didn't see the It Follows trailers. So I really don't know the conventions of these horror trailers. But it seems to be an exciting time for horror movies. This might be, to a degree, the same savior of cinema in a sense, because it serves the bottom line, but you are getting some subversive stuff in it. But anyway, I haven't seen it. I do know that Bite is already out in theaters. It just opened this week as a little bit of counter-programming to Civil War. Let me hit you with some that I saw. I'm surprised that you did not see, certainly, the X-Men Apocalypse trailer.
Oh, yeah, no, I haven't seen that. Isn't that weird?
Because, you know, this is the thing. You know, the last two X-Men movies, we could say, were good. Certainly First Class was really, really good. But, you know, and the trailer for X-Men Apocalypse is not rampantly incompetent like the trailer for Batman versus Superman, right?
Right.
And nor do I expect is the movie rampantly incompetent like that. In fact, I would say it will be rampantly competent.
Excellent. I like rampant competence.
You know, whereas in the case of, as we know, and I hate to just beat it up, but, you know, somebody's got to, Batman versus Superman, the rampant incompetence of the trailer was the indicator of how rampantly incompetent the I felt bad for the people making the trailers, honestly, for Batman versus Superman, because they just didn't have any material to work with at all.
Right.
But here, I think, you know, my fear is that this trailer for X-Men Apocalypse does capture the movie and does capture its relentless, self-satisfied, mind-numbing fetishism, fetishistic approach to comic book storytelling, which honestly is the spiral down which Bryan Singer has been heading for some time.
Oh, no. How bad is it? I mean, what?
Well, I'm not saying that it's quote-unquote bad. It is competent, but it is. The trailer itself is relentless, mind-numbing, and fetishistic.
Wow.
And the attempts at humor, are, which is often true of a Bryan Singer film, are so heavy-handed. So anyway, it'll be interesting, but talk about fanboy banalities. I mean, nothing is more banal than fetishizing these comic books in such a way as to make them seem serious and important.
Yeah.
And you've got a whole lot of actors in that who are desperate to do just that, honestly.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's that's on the other hand, I will say that in May, coming up in May, really soon,
yeah.
I don't want to run out of time for this, is a documentary that I'm really looking forward to, but I've got a real axe to grind with the trailer. Anyway, I think the documentary is going to be terrific. I think it's going to be terrifically funny and insightful and have some wonderful telling commentary. And it's a documentary called Wiener. And it's about former Congressman Anthony Weiner's disastrous attempt to rehabilitate himself and his career when he ran for mayor of New York City. He thought the whole scandal of sending dick pics was going to be behind him. And his campaign imploded.
It imploded because he did it again.
But that seems to be the least of it in terms of who this guy is. But I will say this, the trailer tries too hard to prove how funny the documentary doubtless is. It's one of these snappy Michael Moore-ish trailers where a more thoughtful one would have served the film better. And like I said, I have no doubt that the film is hilarious and is thoughtful and is exactly the sort of film I need to see to restore my sanity amidst the infantile fanboy banalities of movies like X-Men Apocalypse. So I have no doubt that, but the it's almost like the trailer team didn't have faith that this movie can, I don't know, bust through the wall of sound. And so it tries to make this flashy, snappy, trailer, and that's going to turn people off because they might not be able to see the thoughtful movie behind it.
Well, that is too bad because, you know, I mean, inherently, it's a funny story, just because everybody made fun of it. I mean, it was the fodder for comedians the world over. And so why would you then
and the issues,
jump on that bandwagon?
The issue of, I'm sure this guy had great ideas. Some, right. Because all people have great ideas. And how about the ideas that are lost to the ages because of the stupidity of certain personal or public stunts that he made? And and what about this issue of killing off a message by being an incredible messenger? These are interesting topics, and they're rife for satire and exploration in a comedic manner. So anyway, I think it'll be a very good documentary, and I think it's a disappointing trailer.
Got it.
Let me see. What else do I want to hit you with? Because I've got a few here. That are all went a little bit out the beaten path, but let me hit one of the biggies first. And that is June 24th's Independence Day Resurgence.
Oh yeah, I did see that one actually.
You know, a lot of people, Dean, ended up deriding what was actually best about the original Independence Day. I remember how it became really hip to talk about how bad the Independence Day was, to get all sophisticated about it, instead of to appreciate it for what it really was and what it loved, which was 1950s B movies.
Yeah, yeah, a celebration of
B movies,
of a B movie. Absolutely.
I mean, it's so strange to say this, but Independence Day was a film of such joy. And about so much love of a particular form, and that is the 1950s B science fiction movies. And so it always made me sad when people would deride it, because you're now another step removed from getting to celebrate this thing that you love, as did the filmmakers of the movie.
Right. That is sad.
And anyway, I bring that up because not only was that movie fun, and not only did it embrace those B-movie sensibilities, but their ad campaign did that too. you know, posters that would say, "Get off our planet," right?
Oh, right.
And it was such fun. And this one feels like it's made for all the people who derided the kind of hokey fun that was the first one. If the trailer for this movie is any indication of the movie itself, this movie wants to be X-Men Apocalypse.
Right.
And it makes actors in the trailer, like Jeff Goldblum and Bill Pullman, really stick out like sore thumbs.
Really?
You know, hopefully the movie does not take itself as seriously as its trailers would suggest. Hopefully it has that same love, you know, and joyousness in it. But I don't know. The trailer sure, at the very least, seems to be working hard to hide it.
Well, now, is there this sense that you can't have an epic, in air quotes, movie without it having that serious tone throughout the trailer? Like, is it that the idea that it could actually be fun all over again, but in order to make it epic, it's cut any humor, like reset the tone just for the trailer?
Well, you didn't mention the Ghostbusters trailer, and we talked about that in weeks past, but that would be, I guess, evidence for you. Let's say hypothetically that movie is good as opposed to what we believe it's going to be, which is a front runner for worst film of the year, right, along with Star Trek Beyond. We haven't talked about that one. We talked about that one weeks ago, a movie that doesn't have anything Star Trek in it outside of its title, right?
right, exactly.
You know, what do you get when you cross the director of Fast and the Furious with Star Trek? You get Fast and the Furious. you know what sci-fi fans love? Dirt bikes.
Dirt bikes. Yay.
So these movies look like, and we fully expect them to be, horrible. But let's say hypothetically Ghostbusters is good. The first one was great. Rebooting it certainly seems to offer some possibilities. All female cast, that makes sense. But if it's good, then that trailer is I guess, proof of what you're saying, that you should stay away from making it seem jokey or fun or B-movie in any way. You should just go for the heavy-handed epicness. Because, boy, the trailer for the new Ghostbusters, that dog won't hunt.
That dog won't hunt. And also, you know, is this the question? Have we become so used to trailers giving us the funniest jokes that possibly can be culled from the movie that play so flat on the trailer that you just then fear that, oh my God, is that the funniest the movie
exactly.
has to offer?
Isn't that a great point? Yeah.
Yeah. Or is it the other way around? That, oh no, we're holding back the super funny and showing you that A, it's a comedy, but B, it's also every ghost in New York City has all come out at the same time. And, you know,
anyway,
that's a big
deal. I don't know. Maybe Independence Day Resurgence will be in the same vein and spirit of the original. Boy, that trailer sure seems to be more X-Men Apocalypse. That doesn't mean that it won't do big box office, you know, all those Transformers movies did. But anyway, it really makes me think that maybe they lost the soul of the first one.
Good Lord. So you have depressed me.
So here's a handful of one. There's a movie coming out July 13th called The Infiltrator. And
oh yeah, I've heard of this.
It's Bryan Cranston revisiting his Breaking Bad territory with this inspired by real event story of the infiltration of drug kingpin Pablo Escobar's cartel in the 1980s.
Oh.
And Cranston plays an agent who has to infiltrate and become a drug player.
Ah.
He's got to become Heisenberg.
Hilarious.
The trailer does its job in terms of letting me know who the players are and what it's about without
right.
giving me any sign of whether the film is good or bad.
Excellent.
I watched the trailer without any idea of whether it's good or bad. No, I've got to say that doesn't bode well.
No. Wait a sec. Shouldn't you judge the movie on the movie basis, not the trailer basis?
Right, but I don't know if I want to judge it on the movie basis, given that I have no indication here whether the movie is good or bad.
Right.
The fact that I don't have any indication of either worries me more than if the trailer made the movie look bad, because I might be able to say, okay, they don't know how to cut this trailer.
Right. Whereas you're just going, is it neutral or is it just hedge scratching?
It's sort of strange. It really is. Okay, that's what that movie's about.
Wow.
July 15th, just a couple days later, Cafe Society, Woody Allen's new one.
Oh, yeah. This is his latest.
Shot in Los Angeles, set in the 1930s Hollywood. It looks to be much like...
Hail Caesar?
Yeah, as much the Coen's Hail Caesar with nods to Barton Fink as it does to his Midnight in Paris, which is what everybody wants to compare it to. It's an energetic trailer, an energy that I'm not sure we can count on from the movie anymore with Woody, you know?
Right.
They put a little bit of the jazzy music in and put in some Steve Carell talking fast, and it seems like Jesse Eisenberg being, idiosyncratic and eccentric, and suddenly it seems like it has energy, but then you remove that jazzy score and let them go on with that talking for some minutes in long takes that Woody likes. And suddenly the energy might not be there. So I don't know. But I will say that the gag lines in the trailer, none of them are fresh.
Oh, no.
And now here's the question. Is it a comedy? Because he's made some really great films that are not comedies, but they still, because it's Woody Allen, they got to cut them to make them seem funny, like this last one with Joaquin Phoenix. I thought that it really did a disservice to his movie last summer, because it was a very interesting film, but they made the trailer, they cut it like it's a Woody Allen comedy.
Right.
But if this is a comedy, and like you said, this is the best they can come up with,
Well, you know.
The other thing is, other than the era and the place that it's set and who some of the characters are, I have no idea what the movie is about. And Lily had to explain to me, it's about actors wearing some really fantastic wigs. I mean, the wigs are fantastic, and you notice all of them in the trailer.
Wow. That's amazing. But now, what do you have? I mean,
no, it's never a good sign when you're noticing the makeup or the hair, by the way.
Well, that's A.
Yeah.
But B, you're also supposed to write about what you know. And I've never known Woody Allen, A, to even like Los Angeles or Hollywood. And B, like, there's been no indication in any of his movies that he had any connection other than to some black and white motifs, which seem more to come from Swedish and European films than any Hollywood film noir thing.
No, that's not true.
Whatsoever.
I mean, he did, you know, Manhattan Murder Mystery incorporates Lady from Shanghai and classic noir. He does love all that stuff. And of course,
there was the Humphrey Bogart thing, played against Sam.
Started as a writer. He started as a comedy writer. And think about, What's Up Tiger?
Your show shows.
I'm there with you. He's been sometimes refreshing his mojo by going to new cities and immersing himself in those cities, Paris and Barcelona and London. But he can't go to Hollywood of the 1930s. So I don't know. Three quick ones here. We'll do a lightning round.
Okay.
Also on July 15th, the big Weinstein company hope for counter-programming this summer, Tulip Fever. And I was so excited that this might be a movie about how there was that run on tulips in Europe that was so pronounced that tulips became the form of currency.
That's fantastic.
And to all the people who write me wondering what it is Dean's doing right now in the background, I have no idea. So don't write me, write him.
That's Mila and Acosta.
Yeah, I figure. Boy, it's been good. They're entitled to their own show soon. Anyway,
yeah, okay. Tulip I keep walking
Fever.
Away, and they keep following me. So,
but it's not, unfortunately, about that period in European history. Tulip Fever is apparently a whole bunch of Weinstein Company movies you've enjoyed before, with cast members who have won awards in other Weinstein Company movies. It's got historical fiction with painting and adultery and repression. And this time, Zach Galifianakis. It looks like the trailer is a medley of the Weinstein Company's worst hits.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So there's their counter. They're in trouble, the Weinstein Company. All right, two more. I'm going to go with the big hit first.
Okay.
Because I'll go in chronological order. July 29th, you know the name, Dean Hagelin.
Do I?
You know the name.
I bet I do.
Jason Bourne. The ad campaign is, you know the name. I will say this. You need to watch this trailer.
I do.
Paul Greengrass is a wonderful filmmaker. Did United 93 in addition to Bourne movies, did Captain Phillips. He really makes you care about the human characters at the center of his action. But watch this trailer for Jason Bourne, because I found the trailer more satisfying than most action movies I see.
Really?
The trailer.
Just the trailer.
And I must make it clear, I'm not a huge fan of the Bourne movies. I know they're good, and I never particularly cared about them. I've never watched any of them a second time, even the one with Clive Owen.
Your man crush.
I'm disappointed that when they brought back Matt Damon, they didn't name the movie Born Again. That was the great opportunity. But you know the name. You know the name.
I'm sure that came up.
I
came up in the meeting.
I hate how James Bond has been turned into Jason Bourne. But
right.
But all that said, even I am really looking forward to what seems to be as grown up an action movie as we could expect in the year of our Lord 2016. In addition to that, the new supporting cast includes Alicia Vikander, fresh off her Oscar, and Tommy Lee Jones. And they seem to fit in perfectly with this. A much enhanced role for Julia Stiles, who returns. And she's never seemed to have really the career I thought she deserved. So I watched this trailer. The trailer was an enjoyable experience.
Wow.
One of those trailers that made you wish that the movie that you were watching was, in fact, the movie that you had seen advertised in the trailer.
Yeah.
you know, instead of the feature attraction. And finally, I guess another counter-programming in a movie that came out of Sundance, like your science fiction choice. I had to watch the trailer because I'd been hearing so much about it for Southside With You.
Don't know this at all.
This movie comes out August 26th. It is about the best, and then I put in parentheses a question mark after these words, most important first date ever. It tells the story of the first date between Michelle and Barack Obama.
Aww.
And this trailer starts off cutesy and really never stops being cutesy. But I've got to tell you that as manipulative and arch as this trailer is, its utter lack of not only subtlety, but artistry, and maybe even competency, the embodiment by these young actors and their earnestness and their charm do come through in this trailer and win the day for me with this trailer and possibly win the day with the film. I can't speak to it. If the movie is as relentlessly cutesy as this trailer is, it's going to be just unbearable. But if what I'm seeing from these performers is what ultimately is allowed to carry the day, this is a movie that makes a couple of young performers' careers because they both really seem to have it, and their chemistry it seems to be terrific.
Wow! So, but now there's always some weird, political motivation behind any sort of biopic of somebody in current power. Why now and why this story? This seems to me a larger topic of the conversation.
Well, that's interesting that I thought about that too. I was thinking about, we do seem to have a former first lady running for president now.
Right.
I wonder what our next ex-first lady is going to be doing after leaving the White House. Might she be seeking political office? She was the one who was headed for high power lawyerdom, after all, right?
Oh, she was?
So what is she? Well, I learned that from the trailer for a movie called Southside With You about the first date. All right, hey, that brings us to an end of another exciting installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. I hope you guys and ladies, you ladies and gentlemen, you children of all ages, enjoyed listening to us pontificate about these trailers as much as we enjoyed pontificating about them, quite honestly.
Quite honestly, love it.
Find
what we chat about.
Find every installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour at chillpackhollywood.com. Download them, stream them, subscribe via iTunes.
Yes, even write a review.
What could be more fun than that? I ask you. Like us on Facebook, won't you?
Please like us.
Facebook.com/chillpackhollywood. Follow us on Twitter.
Yes, we're at Dean and Phil. Spell out the word and.
And write us. Let us know what you want us to talk about. We'd be happy to do so if we find that topic interesting and if we have something to contribute. That's one of the things we mean when we say it's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Yeah, and say hi to Mila and Akasha as they chew their bone during all the recording.
Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting us. Thanks to Empire State Gas for sponsoring us. We will be back next week with a special guest and a special interview you conducted, Dean Haglund. Yes, you.
Yeah, I did it. That was me.
Until then, I'm Phil Lernis.
I'm Dean Haglund. They're intercontinental and into Australia.
Belated spoiler alert.